You're more than enough. There's resources out there. You're not alone. And you have the world at your fingertips. You really do. And you can create yourself new every day. And your situation that you're in right now is just a season. So if you're depressed, if you're anxious, if you feel alone, it's just a season. There's people out there that can help you. There's friends out there that can be of support. You just might not be surrounded by the right people at the current moment. And in order to figure that out, you have to explore.
Hey, y'all. It's Libby Redden. Welcome back to the podcast. I have been on a little hiatus from posting because I was traveling, but I'm finally back home. And traveling was amazing, but I am very excited to be back. The jet lag is starting to finally go away, so that is lovely. Today, as far as what we will be talking about on the podcast, I think this podcast is great for a few different people, this podcast episode specifically. If you are someone or have someone in your life that has ADHD, this will be a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic episode for you and potentially life-changing in certain ways because the information and skills and tools that Brooke shares, so helpful. So, and easy to apply as well. I also think this is an important episode for anyone to listen to because I do think it's important to educate yourself on how other people might experience life around you in a way that you might not experience life. Additionally, if you are someone considering a career change or you feel unfulfilled right now in what you're doing for work, I think Brooke's story will also really resonate with you and the big leap she made in kind of pulling a 360 in her career and starting this incredible business that she now runs. And before I tell you a little bit more about what we talk about today, I want to give you some background on Brooke. Brooke Schneitman is an expert in the field of ADHD management and support and does an incredible job empowering people with ADHD to overcome challenges and achieve their full potential. Her personal journey we go more into in the episode, but she was someone that was diagnosed with ADHD later in life and married into a family of ADHDers, and it's provided her with profound insight and empathy for her clients, and I think that's the reason she's been able to create such transformational coaching and experiences for people with ADHD, because she has such a deep level of empathy and understanding on a personal level. She has 2 decades of experience working in the realm of ADHD and has worked closely with thousands of individuals with ADHD. And in 2018 was when she made her career pivot and she founded Coaching with Brooke, which is an organization that is a leading global authority in the field of ADHD coaching. Brooke is not only the CEO and founder of Coaching with Brooke, but she also is an incredible speaker. She is the mastermind behind the ADHD Ed Camp, a platform that fosters education and collaboration within the ADHD community to make education more ADHD friendly and things along those lines. She's also the co-host of the ADHD Power Tools podcast and hosts the Successful with ADHD podcast that also has incredible insights and strategies to help people with ADHD overcome obstacles and achieve the success that they want to achieve. So if this episode resonates, I would definitely tell you to go hop over to one of those podcasts or her website, which I will put all in the description. But a little more insight of what we're talking about today. We talked about her story, discovering that she had ADHD and what led to leaving the private education system and starting her own ADHD coaching business. When I told folks in my text community that I was having someone on that was an ADHD expert, a lot of people had questions about overwhelm and overthinking because that's a very common struggle with people with ADHD. And she gives such good information and tools on how you can regulate that, along with tools that can help with emotional regulation, honestly, not just for people with ADHD, but just people in general. So please enjoy. This is such a good episode, and I think this will be so helpful for so many people to not only better understand themselves, but maybe also other people in their life. All of Brooke's information will be in the show notes. And we also, something new I've started doing, I'm doing Q&As at the end of every podcast episode. And in order to be a part of those, that is specifically for people within my text community. It's free. You can join my text community. The text community is for US and Canada only. If you are outside of the US, you can join my broadcast channel on Instagram. And essentially, before I record my podcast episodes, I send out a message to my text community and broadcast channel and prioritize the questions that the people in those communities have for my upcoming guests. And then you can get direct answers from an expert with any questions you might have with the experts that I bring on. So if you're interested in that, I will have my broadcast channel and my text community linked in the show notes as well. That is all. Enjoy the episode and thank you for tuning in. Is there a story of struggle or success? Well, we'll start from when you were younger. Is there a story of struggle, success that happened when you were younger that sort of put you on the path to where you are today?
Yeah. So I came from a family of educators and entrepreneurs, and they always taught me hard work. You have to work hard to get where you are. You don't have to be the smartest. You just have to try harder than everyone else. When I was in fourth grade, I ended up moving from private school to public school, and I got bullied like really bad. And I'm still dealing with some of the emotional trauma of that. And that continued on until I was 35, until I started my own business and I received coaching. So because of that work hard mentality, I really attributed my self-esteem to working hard. And yeah. I'm sure you hear it all the time, but it doesn't matter. And nothing else matters as long as I'm working hard and people know that. That's what I was thinking. And because of that, mm-hmm. I gave up so much. I gave up so many relationships, working on myself. And I don't regret it at all. I am glad that I have the core value of working hard. But since I learned more about myself and put my priorities in place and got married and have kids, I just know how to work smarter and I prioritize. And I use my own tools that I help with everyone else in still being able to be productive. But knowing when to shut off and knowing when enough's enough.
Right. Yeah. And do you feel like that idea of just working super hard all the time, do you think ADHD contributed to that? Or was that more of just a learned mindset from family or maybe just a mixture of both?
I think it's a mixture of both. And I think it's also like the trauma of not really having many friends that I can rely on. One thing I knew I could rely on was me working hard and then getting that positive reinforcement from my administrators and higher ups and climbing the ladder of success. I made it far fast. Doesn't mean I was happy. Yeah. And that's why I ended up leaving public education and starting an ADHD coaching business. But I would say it's nurture, nature, and just not like having the right tools. I went to lots of different therapists, but I didn't even know what coaching was. Like I was on a swim team, I was on a basketball team, I was on a tennis team, but I didn't know coaches existed.
You just named all the sports that I did.
See, or aligns.
That's awesome.
The universe works in weird ways.
Are you tall?
I am. I was 5'9", almost 5'8¾". And then I shrunk and then I grew again. So.
Okay.
How about
you? I'm 6 feet, so.
Wow, it's so funny.
I'm just a tall lady.
You just don't know unless I reach over to the other side of that screen and pull you out.
Yeah, I know it's funny with podcasting, like some of the people that I'd known for years and then I meet them in person, I'll show up in like heels. So I'm like 6'3", and they're like, what? What's happening?
You know what's crazy? Yeah, I had a salesperson work for me for months and I thought he was short. I don't know why I thought that, but in my mind, all I saw was here up. And I would talk to him every day. One day he tells me he's tall. I'm like, no, you're not. There's no way you're tall. He's 6'4" and he stands up. I'm like, oh my gosh.
What is happening? That's so funny. But yeah, I mean, going back, I think for so many people, the rejection that occurs in your youth just runs so deep. And it's a difficult thing to unlearn. And sort of moving forward, taking a step forward in your journey. So you were a special ed teacher for 7 years mm-hmm. and then 4 years as an assistant director in special education.
Mm-hmm. And then
you changed routes.
Yeah, I came to Florida and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with myself. I knew it wasn't going to be in public education. And then I ended up going into private education and pretty much had the same role, special education teacher and administrator. And then I was like, no, right. I need to work for myself and I need to make a greater impact. So then that's when I pivoted and I actually received coaching for a year at the recommendation of one of my friends. I didn't even know I had ADHD at the time. It was life coaching. And mm-hmm. I finally executed for the first time. I knew how I was showing up for people, showing up for myself, being able to break things down and be accountable and intentional. I've never gone through anything like that before. Yeah. So then through that journey, I met someone and she was an ADHD coach and she's like, you'd be great at this. I said, sign me up. She had a similar background to me and I just knew what she was saying and what she was putting down was something I needed to get behind. I didn't know really much about it, but I just knew that she was making such a big impact and if she could do it, I could do it and she believed in me. So that helped me believe in myself. And I went for the certification. I started my business overnight. And then 5 years later, here I am, 8 coaches, like 12 people who work for the company. It's great.
Amazing. And so you had that conversation with her and she was saying that you would be really good at coaching in that aspect. Was there, I mean, you know, you say like, I just moved to Florida. Like I completely changed my life. Was there like an aha moment or an experience where you were like, I can't do this. Like, I feel like something would have to push you to make such drastic changes, you know?
Oh yeah, totally. So I had a really difficult work situation when I was in the last job I had in the public school system. My boss and I had like a love-hate relationship. And then I had some people that I worked with very closely that were bullies. And it just was very toxic. So I knew that I wanted to get out. I also wasn't giving it my all like I did prior. And that was a sign for me. Like, I'm not invested in this. And that sucks.
Yeah,
I actually cried the day I was hired for this job. Because I was leaving such an amazing school district that I loved so much. And I was like, why am I doing this? I'm doing this so I can level up. But like, am I actually leveling up? Like it's a greater job description, but I'm with different people. It's a whole different environment. I gave it 2 years and I was out because I was so unhappy. And then when I came to Florida, I was trying to figure out a job. I was trying to figure out my own business. And I couldn't figure out what it was. I thought about advocacy. I greatly admire advocates. We need them. Unfortunately, we need them. We shouldn't have to need them, but we do need them. But I didn't want to fight with the school district. That was not what I wanted to get into. And very often, unfortunately, advocates have to do that. So I'm like, what else can I do that is in the same field, but it's not that? So when I was in the private school system, I had a very similar boss to the previous one that I had. And she actually was worse. And
so fun.
I'm like, you know what? Again, if she can do this, if she can own her own business, and like, I want to do everything that she's not doing. I want to be the boss that she isn't. I want to make a greater difference. I want to actually help people. I want people to work beside that, we can lift each other up and inspire each other where I'm not their boss. I'm a colleague, you know? And I just felt like I wasn't able to do it there. So gave her my notice. And yeah, then it was game over from there. I mean, there's a lot more that happened in between, but.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, that was my passion.
And, I mean,
reason.
It's kind of beautiful because I think it's also, well, it's very beautiful seeing there's also a full circle there where, you know, growing up, you felt like there weren't a lot of spaces where you were accepted and fully loved. And now you've been able to create an environment, a work environment, and also an environment for people with ADHD where they can feel that, which is beautiful.
You know, yeah. It's so like, it gives me chills hearing that because, you know, so often, even as a coach, you don't really think about what you're doing. You know, you just do. And it's so hard to reflect and see like all the beautiful things that we've done. And we have, I mean, we've worked with thousands of people. We help millions of people a day. And I mean, yeah, I want to cry because I get messages from people that like, we've changed their life. And what better place to, you know, work in and put my head on the pillow, even if I can't sleep at night, but still put my head on the pillow at night doing.
Yeah. Even if you're on steroids with the
sinus
infection.
Even if I'm on steroids, I'm superhuman woman who is just staring at the clock, watching hours roll by, seeing Livy email me getting excited for the pod.
Yeah, and before I kind of hop into more specific ADHD related questions, one more question I had concerning your journey is then you also had a daughter. Mm-hmm. And I know you have three stepsons as well.
Two stepsons and a daughter. Mm-hmm.
Two stepsons and a daughter. And so this is a little bit off track, I guess, but I also would love to hear, just as someone that also aspires to be a mother, what was that experience like holding your daughter for the first time? And how has that sort of impacted how you live since then?
That's a multiple step question. So when I was delivering, I was in labor for 2 days and then I was 7 centimeters dilated. And they were like, sorry, we're going to do a C-section. Like, all right. And at that point, I had an Eden and I had an epidural in me. I was running on true adrenaline like I am right now. And I threw up once I was on the operating table into a bag while they're cutting me open.
I'm so excited to be a mom.
I'm like, yes. So I have my husband looking at me like feeling terrible that he can't do anything to help me, right? He's just standing there feeling helpless. And the baby comes out, the nurse sees her, my husband sees her, and they're all like smiling and everything. And there's this big, you know, blanket in front of me so I couldn't see the organs sticking out of my belly. And I'm like, can I see her? Can I see her, please?
Yep.
Can I have my baby? Thanks. Yeah. So eventually they put her on top of my chest and yeah, I was delirious, but it was a surreal moment. And I knew at that point, everything was going to change and it did. And I didn't know how it was going to change. I was worried about how it was going to change. I was worried I wasn't prepared because you're never prepared until you get there.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, knew that I could trust my husband who's gone through this journey twice already. And I had support around me. And I think that's the golden key for everything, right? Like when you're new to something, surround yourself with people who have done it before or can be of support to you because navigating it alone is so isolating and it could be like very anxiety ridden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Anyway, she can get away with a lot and I just smile and laugh and it's terrible because like I thought she was going to be a daddy's girl, but like I totally let her get away with, I don't want to use the word, but you know.
Shenanigans.
Now her new thing is no. And then she'll pull my shirt to like drag me to wherever she wants to go. It's cute.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny. The sarcasm. Yeah, this is really funny. And maybe you can take advantage of this, but my mom thought it would be funny that when we were kids, she was like, I want my kids to act really proper when they meet somebody because it's kind of funny and it's cute. So she had taught us when we were really little to go up and shake somebody's hand and go, nice to meet you. Every time we met somebody new. And that was like, people always got a kick out of it. And I was like, I'm glad I could be your party trick, Leah. So funny.
Aww. Well, my daughter's 19 months, so she has some time before I can train her to do that. But right now she's doing this. Hi.
So cute.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that can be, handshaking can be her thing. But so sort of transitioning, as you know, the main people that are listening to my podcast are late teens, early to mid-20s, and whether you think of yourself as a 21-year-old or somebody listening, what would you want, we'll say a 21-year-old specifically, that has ADHD to know?
That you have a whole life ahead of yourself.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I know that's a very like general question.
No. You have your whole life ahead of yourself. When we're 21, we think like we know everything, right? We're adults. We're exploring. When I was 21, I had just gone to grad school in New York City and I was partying and I thought I was the coolest thing going to nightclubs with like Paris Hilton and whatever. So I thought I knew everything, you know?
Yep.
And yep. There was so much I didn't know. So just enjoy wherever you're at, wherever you are is where you're supposed to be. And you have so much time to get to where you need to go. Not to say that you shouldn't do whatever you want and, you know, reach your potential and accomplish your dreams, but there's so much you're going to learn about yourself, especially in your 20s, every single year. And you're going to have to go through these experiences to understand more about yourself. The more we say, I have to be a certain way now, how will you? First of all, how do you know you have to be that way, right? Date, meet new people, experience stuff. That's how you know what you like, what you don't like. That's how you know which bosses are good for you, which aren't. That's how you know which jobs work and which don't. You don't always have the magic answer in your 20s. Like, explore if you can.
Yeah. I love that. Do stuff. Just do stuff.
Do stuff. Do yeah. stuff.
Yeah.
And just know you're 21, you know? Like, it's okay to mess up. It's okay to mess up at any time of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, that speaks to me a lot too, because it is a very interesting realm to be in, to sort of do what I do, but also be in my early 20s, because especially in your 20s, you think you're so self-aware and there's so many things you don't know about yourself.
I learn something new every day.
Yeah. And it's like, even just yesterday, I was at a business mastermind with James Whitaker, who introduced us. He is fantastic. And I was just sitting there and I've always had this weird tie thinking that, you know, I do stuff and I can jump into the unknown. I'm not scared of uncertainty. And I was sitting there hearing people talk and I was just thinking, there is so much more fear to be unpacked that is holding you back than you've ever told yourself that you have.
Oh yeah.
And that was just shocking to me because I was like, no, I thought I was like, I had conquered fear, which is like, what is that? And so, yeah, it's very interesting, regardless of what you're doing or what stage you're at, especially in your 20s, definitely don't try and think you've got yourself figured out because you don't.
And even when you think you figured yourself out later in life, you still haven't. Like, we're constantly evolving and expanding. And also to that point, your brain is still developing into your mid to late 20s. They say like 25 is when your brain fully develops, but really it can develop all the way until you're 30. And when you have ADHD, you're 30% usually delayed in social and emotional intelligence. So now you're no longer 21. You got to take 30% off of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just think about that. Just have fun, because, you know, there are going to be things that you're going to get into when you're older, and you're going to look back and be like, oh man, my 20s is a good time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't take yourself too seriously.
And absolutely. Yes. I love that. Thank you.
Yeah.
And
also, sorry, not to cut you off again, but.
Yeah, no problem.
You can still conquer the world at 21 too. So like, even though I said all of the things that I did, like, don't ever hold yourself back either, but still have fun while you're doing it, and know that you have a whole life ahead of you too, to keep growing.
Mm-hmm. And do that forever. Have forever. Fun while you're doing it forever. Yeah,
exactly.
I love it. And kind of piggybacking off of that, I find, as someone that's, you know, spoken with thousands of teenagers and college students, I think one of the biggest core threads I find that keeps a young adult from having fun, really, or doing stuff, is generally a lack of just being at war with their minds, the overthinking, the overwhelm.
Yeah.
And to get into more ADHD specific questions, I have a lot of people, actually probably the majority of the people that are the most important in my life have ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much all of them have, I mean, we all do, but I think it's in a different way, struggle with overwhelm,
mm-hmm.
overthinking, mm-hmm. ruminating thoughts. Mm-hmm. What are some good coping strategies for that? Specifically that overthinking, that overwhelm. Yeah, what are some coping strategies for that?
Yeah, great question. So in my book that is available for pre-order called Activate Your ADHD Potential.
Woo-hoo!
Woo-hoo. I talk about the ADHD disruption cycle. And on one side of the cycle is overwhelm, and one side of the cycle is underwhelm. So we're constantly like bouncing back and forth from underwhelm and overwhelm. Both of them are really dangerous, because what happens with overwhelm is you've already had all those like overwhelming thoughts and the RSD, and then you burn out. Once you're burned out, you're shut down, right? Or you're in your F response. At that point, it takes you a while to come back. It's different for everyone. But then you're in a state of underwhelm. And then when you're in underwhelm, you're looking for dopamine. So then you're looking for that exciting new idea that gives you dopamine, that gets you into the hyper-focus. Then you hyper-focus and you feel overwhelmed. And then you have low dopamine and you start all over. So you could be at anywhere in the cycle throughout any time of the day or multiple times a day. And when you're starting to overthink, check in with yourself and say, okay, this is what I start off with in the book. What am I not attending to personally? Have I eaten? Did I drink water? Did I sleep? Is what I'm doing important right now? Can I put it on hold? Think about your basic hierarchy of physiological needs. Take care of those first. And remove yourself from the environment that you're overthinking in. Because very often when you go outside or you change rooms, you're no longer struggling with that negative thought. So go somewhere, take care of yourself. Then when you have that space to start thinking, brainstorm everything that's on your mind. What are my thoughts? Get it out of your head and onto paper. Because when we get it out of our head, it's so much less chaotic. I know there's going to be a lot on that paper for you, but at the same time, at least you see it now. And then the rest of the book gives you strategies to conquer that. But start with your basic needs first.
Mm, that's fantastic. Because that's, I mean, I I don't have ADHD myself, but I do see, for example, one of my best friends that I live with. It's a struggle, especially right now. She's in a very busy corporate job that is kind of the worst, and it's really hard for her to remember to cover those basic needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I used to feel I had to work hard. I had to be productive to be self-confident. And so many ADHDers feel that way too. Like, I'm not enough if I don't do these 20 things on my to-do list. But it's a never-ending vicious cycle, because you're not going to get those things done ever the way that is in a healthy way. Maybe you hyper-focus one day and you get more done than you thought you would, but then you're burnt out and then you start the cycle again. Like I said before, with anything, joining some sort of support group or accountability with a friend, having someone take this journey with you that you can, you know, hold each other accountable and shoot ideas back and forth. We're verbal processors. So when we're in it alone, it's really hard. So we have, as if you buy our book, we have a community. It's a Discord community where you could body double for life. And there's always ADHD adults in there. And it's a free video room for people to body double. And our clients currently are in there. Alumni are currently in there. And honestly, it can make or break you, because we know what we want to do as ADHDers. But I talk in the book, like, I give you accountability questions too. Like, how am I going to know that I did it? When is it going to be done by? And how am I going to help? Like, who is going to help support me to get there? Like, what accountability am I going to need? So all of those are accountability questions when executing on a task or an action or a to-do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that you brought up body doubling, because I have, with my friends that have ADHD and autism, body doubling has changed their life. One of them even started a company that is simply providing spaces for body doubling, because it is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. FocusMate is out there. That works too. A lot of people are doing that for free 3 times a week.
Yeah. And I do want to mention too, you've mentioned accountability a lot. Anyone that's listening, if you have ADHD, the people that love you in your life want to support you. And if, for example, my sister has ADHD or my roommate, if they came to me and were like, hey, I want to do like a check-in or something once a week, because sometimes I struggle covering my needs or like noticing what I'm feeling. Because anyone, not even people with ADHD, struggle with that. Mm-hmm. I would say yes immediately. Like, ask for help. Ask for accountability from the people that you love, because they want to help you. Just ask. You know what I mean?
Exactly. That's the hardest thing, I think, that we struggle with as humans, asking for help. And very often, like you said, people want to help you, but when you don't accept their help, they feel rejected. So lean into that feeling and know that you're enough where people who love you would want to help you. And you're also helping them too, because whenever you help someone else, you're helping yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I imagine you can probably relate to this too. It is very hard to ask for help. And that was a big journey that I had to go on, where I grew up in a family. We were fighters. I was taught to fight. I was taught to persevere. I was taught to, like, I could do it on my own. Like, independence was everything. Mm-hmm. And to finally get to a point where I could reframe that asking for help isn't weakness. It's actually a strength, and to be someone that can bring community together, can bring love together. What a strength. Like, how could I possibly think that asking for help is a weakness? Like, humans were never made to function
alone,
solo. Yeah.
No, I mean, we are social beings. We get depressed when we are by ourselves, and that's why there were so many mental health issues since COVID. No, I mean, and the more you open up and be vulnerable with the people who love you, you get to learn more about them too, because they end up sharing some things that they probably share with you. that you didn't know about them.
Yeah. Great point. That is absolutely true. And also, what, so we've talked about accountability, finding ways to structure that a little bit better. You have resources in your book.
Mm-hmm.
How, relating to that, structuring accountability, how, I think everybody has to do things that they don't want to do. Mm-hmm. Is there any additional structures or strategies in your book or that might come to mind as far as how someone with ADHD can get themselves to do the things that they don't want to do?
Yeah, 100%. So I mentioned dopamine. When we're not interested in something, we hypofocus, which means we're doing the opposite of hyperfocusing. We literally are like rejecting the task. We don't want to go near it. Okay. So yeah, accountability helps there, but also getting your dopamine levels up. So that could be, obviously the highest way of doing that is by taking a stimulant, but you could also take a different type of stimulant like coffee. You could have chocolate. You could dance. You could exercise. You could meditate. There's so many ways of getting your dopamine levels up naturally, going outside, being in the sun. It doesn't last as long as stimulant medication, but it still can help you get excited or more into doing the thing. Like, everyone hates laundry. I don't know anyone who likes laundry, ADHD or not. and in order to like get you going with laundry, maybe you need to listen to music. Maybe you need to like pair your task with something that energizes you. Or maybe you have to do a dopamine inducing activity, but right before you do the activity or right after you do the activity as a reward. So yes, I talk about that a lot in my book. And then ultimately it's figuring out, once you go through those 12 steps, like, what are your values? What are your strengths? What are your passions? And what is your optimal focus time? What are your dopamine levels? And then figuring out actually what you have to do. Because if you detest something so much, it doesn't matter how much dopamine you have, it's still something that you should consider delegating or eliminating. Like, why are you doing that? Do you have to do that thing? And I think very often we think that we're only good if we do everything, but we don't have to do everything again. We can ask for help.
Mm. We're only good if we think we can do everything. Yeah, it's a scary mindset to be in.
Yeah, it is.
You mentioned meditation in there. That was a question I had. I had somebody ask that knew I was gonna have you on the podcast.
Yeah.
Do you meditate? And do you think you personally, and also does meditation help people with ADHD? Would you say?
Yeah. 100%, it helps everyone. So it's hard to meditate with ADHD. So I used to do transcendental meditation because I had a lot of accountability. I got into a routine. I was doing it like 45 minutes a day, which is a very big investment. This was before I was married and had kids. So I had more time in my life to do that. And I also had that toxic boss. So this saved me, honestly, from reacting physiologically. I was in a transcendental state.
Yep.
However, that only lasted for so long because it was a big commitment. And people with ADHD, yep, their minds wander. People with anxiety, their minds wander. I mean, a lot of people can't sit there and just think of a mantra or one thing to meditate. So you could do guided meditations. You could also literally just focus on an object while you're walking. If you go outside, look at the trees, focus on the birds. That's meditative. Kick a soccer ball, that's meditative. If you're focusing on one thing at a time, that is meditation and mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always this.
Yep. Yep. Is there a specific, whether that's passive or whatever, is there a specific like version of meditation that you yourself prefer?
It varies for me. It really does. It depends on, you know, with ADHD, you need micro changes. Also, we get bored of certain things after a while and we need to move on to something else. So I used to do transcendental meditation. I don't do it anymore. Then I went into guided meditations with like the Calm app or the Insight Timer or the 21-day Chopra Oprah challenge. And now literally the best thing for me is to sit outside and just take some deep belly breaths and focus on the wind or the trees and just slow my nervous system down. That's what helps. And then when I have energy, sometimes I'll go for a brisk walk, which is great because it gets your dopamine levels regulated too and your serotonin.
Perfect. And I like that you also mentioned not only just going outside, taking a deep breath, but picking something to focus on to anchor you, I think is so helpful.
Yeah. If you go outside and you look at the trees, do you know that that I learned is EMDR? That's where EMDR came from. So I hired a therapist for EMDR and we do like bilateral movement and we're reprogramming my brain, but actually just going outside and looking at the trees while you walk, that's EMDR.
For anyone that doesn't know what EMDR is, can you just do a quick explanation?
So with our memories, we very often remember negative things more than positive things because emotions are tied to memory. So we have strong negative emotions that tie to negative memories. So sometimes we have a response to situations and we our F responses, which are fight, flight, flee, fawn, fib, all of those come out. And we don't know why sometimes, like some people just trigger it or some events just trigger it. So EMDR helps you to reprogram the way that your body reacts to those things that are triggering you. So you don't have as big of a physiological response and it can be done in different ways, but it's bilateral eye movement. And that's how you're reprogramming your brain. So you work with a therapist who does it with you and gets to the core of like when the problem started and how that is aligned throughout your life. And you kind of just hit it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I imagine EMDR would probably be a great form to rewire specifically for people with ADHD, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because with ADHD, like very often we don't want to just talk about our problems and then leave it out there. Like talk therapy very often doesn't work. It didn't work for me. And this is more of like a cognitive reprogramming. You have practical strategies and tools and your reactions are different. So you have a different response to things and to people.
Yeah. It's very fascinating. And I feel like anyone that's listening, I would definitely look into that. I could drop a resource if you want to look into EMDR in the description, because it is very interesting and has helped a lot of people in my own life. I haven't personally done it, but I would love to like do it with a a coach or what do you call them, therapists? Or would they be psychologists?
Psychologist, a counselor, you know, it could be, it could be a social worker. It could be a psychologist. There's many different mental health providers.
Yeah. And so I'm going to hop into some questions people had asked. I had sent out, by the way, to anyone that's listening, often before I have guests on, I'll send out either Instagram stories or TikTok story. I'll send out a message if anybody has any questions that they want asked. So I would, if you haven't ever replied to those, I would do that because you are also getting direct information from incredible people and experts like Brooke.
Thank you.
So feel free to ask questions before the episodes because I think they were also some really amazing ones that people asked that I didn't come up with myself. So also help me.
Help me help you.
Please. Help me help you. So the meditation was one of them and we already sort of covered that. Another question that somebody had was, people with ADHD often experience emotional dysregulation. For those that have hypersensitive emotional reactions, how do they know when to trust their emotions as opposed to when they're just experiencing hypersensitivity?
Okay, so that's a loaded question.
Yeah, it's a lot.
First of all, you have to start feeling more confident in yourself. And by the 12 steps in the book, it's helping you feel like you can actually execute something. Now, hypersensitivity could be, I'm sorry to say, but it could be a superpower. I'm a hypersensitive person. Usually our intuition is right. We just don't trust it enough. Now, if we're extremely emotionally dysregulated, we might not realize it in the moment. So when you're calm and you're regulated, so when you have a bad executive functioning day, it's hard to, you know, evaluate, is it me or is it my executive dysfunction? Is it my hypersensitivity? Is it them? It's really hard. So take a step back. Sometimes you need to pause, you need to delay. And then when you feel a little bit more in tune with your body and emotionally more regulated, then evaluate the situation from a logical perspective. And sometimes you can talk it out with someone you trust too and say, like, am I crazy here? Mm-hmm. This is what I'm noticing. And it's not that you're relying on the other person. It's not that you're dependent on the other person, but we're verbal processors. So sometimes we get to the answer by talking it out. So mm-hmm. I would say trust your gut, but also if you are emotionally charged, you can't do anything at that point. So you need to take a step back and process before understanding if it's you, if it's them, if it's the situation.
Right. And how would someone, what are some ways that someone can regulate their emotions when they're in that state or regulate their nervous system?
Yeah. So I talk about that actually in my Healing ADHD Emotions course. We have a lesson on stop being so defensive. So when you are hyper aware and hypersensitive to something that you're about to get defensive on, notice and do it when you are calm. And think about, like, right now while you're listening, if you're in a calm state, what happens to your body when you are in a defensive spot? Think of a scenario that happened this week that got you charged, or recently that got you charged. What were you experiencing in your body? Do you get headaches? Do you get tension in your shoulders? Do your legs get tight? Do you sweat? Do you get red? Do you start having these negative thoughts, like shortness of breath? And you might not know it right away, but usually when you think of a situation that triggers you, then you can start bringing up that physiological response again. So become aware of times that you're charged. And if you can't think of it, move forward with that thought in mind. Okay, I'm just going to be attuned to when I'm charged, what's happening to me. This is going to be a test. I'm not going to do anything, but I'm just going to be aware. Once you're aware of what your triggers are, then down the road, when something happens that triggers you, once you start feeling that, literally think of a stop sign. And just stop, pause. The person might be talking at you or talking to you, right? And what you can do is have like a one-liner. Hey, I just need some time to process this. I'm going to go take a break and we can come back to the conversation at X time. Or you can repeat back what the person is saying to, like, put in fillers to their words so you can calm yourself down a little bit. And if you feel like you're calm after you repeat back some of their words, like the last three words of their sentence, or, oh yeah, tell me more about that type of thing while you're like trying to calm, you might be in a better spot at that point. But very often when I'm charged and I need to process something, whatever I say in the moment is not going to come out well. So my husband and I have a rule that if it's too late at night, or if like we get to a point where we just can't see eye to eye, we just come back to it another time and we have a safe word and we respect the safe word.
I like the safe word. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. Thank you. Those are incredible tips.
Thank you.
And simplistic and easy to grasp. And final question that somebody had asked was, someone asked this, and this is also, because I also recently posted about this, so I think it's, people also know that I'm going through this, but do you have any thoughts on Because I know for some people, Adderall doesn't work for them. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go good with their body. For me, I was on antidepressants for quite a few years, mm-hmm. and recently weaned off of them.
Oh, wow.
So the question is, how might you instruct someone or any sort of strategies if they are thinking of weaning off Adderall or an antidepressant?
Well, two totally different strategies. So I'm on both.
I guess that's true. They're very different. Yeah.
Very different. I'm not a doctor, so don't listen to what I have to say about this. You got to talk to your doctor. But I can say personally, with an antidepressant, you have to wean off of it, right, over time. With stimulant, you don't have to. So speak to your doctor and find out what the strategy is that they recommend, and make sure that you're supervised by them while you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was a very interesting process for me, because I actually just like got put on an antidepressant by my psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. Like, looking back, I'm like, why was I not talking to a therapist or somebody else? Like, they, yeah. So I just went on it. And then the wean off process that they recommended was horrific, actually.
Yeah,
it was
like a drug addict recommendation. Right? Yeah.
Well, and I also, like, the way that they told me to do it, I had brought it up to other people that are also psychiatrists, and they were like, that's dumb. And I was like, well, that's why I feel like I'm crazy. Yeah, no, she's...
Yeah, it's supposed to be a long period of time for the wean-off process. Long, yeah. Slow, and gradual.
Yeah, it was sort of that, but not quite. But yeah, by the way, if anyone that's listening is going through that and wasn't expecting it to be as bad as they thought it was, you're not crazy alone. Because I also feel crazy.
My gosh, when I tried to go off of antidepressants when I was right before I got pregnant, I felt like shaky and like just sweating and all these things. And I'm like, all these negative thoughts that were, and I think I did it too soon. So I ended up going on Zoloft after the Lexapro. And I'm still on Zoloft, and, you know, I like it. And to me, there's nothing wrong with being on it because it's helping me. It's taking the edge off. But yeah. Talk to your doctor.
Is there any last thing that you would want to advise or last thing you would want to say specifically to young people?
Yeah. Know that, again, you're more than enough. There's resources out there. You're not alone, and you have the world at your fingertips. You really do. And you can create yourself new every day. And your situation that you're in right now is just a season. So if you're depressed, if you're anxious, if you feel alone, it's just a season. There's people out there that can help you. There's friends out there that can be of support. You just might not be surrounded by the right people at the current moment. And in order to figure that out, you have to explore, you have to try, you have to get out and really put yourself out there and have some exposure, which is scary. But there's a whole world of opportunity out there for you. And again, right now is just a season. So this too shall pass.
Beautiful. Thank you. And thank you so much for talking today. This was amazing. And
thank you for having me.
Of course. I will hit stop. But yeah, thank you so much. This was a beautiful conversation. And I think one that was very due on the podcast, because I've had people asking me ADHD questions forever. I'm super pumped to see you've reached the end of the podcast. Not only because you hung out with me and our guests, but because you took the time to better your life through the stories and advice shared on this podcast. And if y'all would go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review, that would seriously mean the world to me. And if something in the podcast really sparked an aha moment for you, please share it with those you love and get a conversation going, because I truly believe that that is where the magic happens. So keep learning, seizing the moment, and intentionally creating your life. Thanks for listening, and I hope to have you back soon.